You are listening to Fanthatrax.
Because of the following special program, Wonder Woman and the Incredible Hulk will not be presented this evening.
Time to get all your Star Wars news in a single file. This is Making Tracks. Here are your hosts, Mark Newbold and Mark Mulcaster.
That's not true. That's impossible.
Hello and welcome back to Making Tracks, brought to you by the fine folk over at fanfortracks.com. My name's Mark, this is episode 108, and with me this week, in a rather quick and hurried turnaround time, it's Mr. Mark Newbold. Mark, how are you doing, buddy?
Oh, wow. I'm good. I'm very good. But you're not wrong. It is a real fast turnaround today. I mean, there's so much news coming, and we're so busy. To show how late this is for us, we're going to talk briefly about Star Wars Galaxy of Sounds. That's how up-to-date we are today.
At least I haven't seen it because it dropped this morning when I left for work at 20 past six. And I'm still at work now. You know, it's it's 4 o'clock. So, you know, this episode is coming to you live from Colour Suite 2 at Sky TV. So there you go. Just for a little bit of geographic placing there. How was your weekend, dude? Have you you've had a good, fun, busy week and what have you?
Yeah, the week has gone quickly as usual, and there seems to have been plenty of Star Wars in it, but the weekend was a bit cool. It was down to London, to the Roundhouse, to see Ash, who Star Wars fans might know. They played the after party at Phantom Menace. The clone song from their Meltdown album was used for Republic Commando. So Ash have got quite a cool connection to Star Wars. So we were lucky enough to go down. Four of us went down, myself, Greg from Desert Planet Discs, Paul Naylor from Fanthatrax, and Martin Keeler from the Zuvium, all met down at the Roundhouse, saw the gig, got backstage, went to the after party. Then we went to the after party.
Nice.
Me and Paul left London at 2 a.m. and I got home at 4:45 and he had another 45 minutes drive.
So God.
It was a long day, but it was a really good day. I mean, they're an amazing band. They're fantastic to see live. Mark Hamilton, the bass player, is a big Star Wars fan. He's been on Desert Planet Discs. There's an episode with Mark on Desert Planet, and he's been on Fantatrax. Awesome weekend. Really cool.
Awesome.
Weekend. How about you?
Yeah. Well, I had a busy one. I had a busy couple of days before that because actually, Martin, he dropped me a message on Wednesday morning. It was like, any chance you could get some troopers to the Roundhouse gig on Saturday? And I was like, well, I'll give it a good old college try. So yes, so the Rebel Legion and the 501st UK Garrison luckily pulled out all the stops and we got some members down. I mean, in fairness, I was at Norcon in Norwich and we had two or three troopers, in fact, that were trooping Let's Rock, which is a kind of 80s revival festival in Norwich. And they drove from there after trooping all day to the gig at the Roundhouse and basically trooped in the evening and were accosted by many a semi-inebriated Ash fan. So that was cool. I was fairly sensible in respect to that. I was just like, you know what, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to stay at Norwich, do the Norcon and come back on Sunday evening, which is what I did.
You know, the weird thing is you could have come because Level Up Leroy, who was at Norcon, came down to the Ash gig because he was one of the support acts for Ash. And as soon as the gig had pretty much finished, Leroy was back on the road heading up to Norfolk. So you could have done it.
I could have done it. Well, thing was, there was an amazing UK Garrison social barbecue happening and I just kind of said I'd be there. And you know what it's like, sometimes it's just nice to kind of let your hair down and watch the fireball that is a UK Garrison barbecue kind of like happen. But I was at Norcon this weekend and it was fantastic. It was first time I've been to Norcon, but it's a decent size, but it's also like got a really nice vibe. The organizers are just like wonderful, really kind of just can't help you enough. And I was there, like I said, with the Rebel Legion and the UK Garrison were there and the Mando Mercs were there and the Silver Sabres, so we all had a great time and the weather was good. It didn't rain, it was a little bit warm, and I did actually manage to pick up a few little items, you know, from the vendors as well, so it was a good weekend.
We normally talk about what kind of stuff we picked up, so you've teed yourself up perfectly.
Look at that. So I picked up the first wave of Star Wars Resistance figures. I saw them on display probably at Celebration Europe 3 in London. I think they were at the Hasbro stand, or it might have been like MCM London the following year. But I saw them, but I never picked them up. I never brought them, and they kind of, you know, disappeared. But there was a vendor there who was basically desperate to get rid of them. So, I brought them for like 30 quid or something. And these were like case fresh mint. I think I actually got a decent deal on that. And of course, you know me, I could never pass up the opportunity of picking up some additional Funko Pops. So I picked up the 40th anniversary of Empire Strikes Back Princess Leia exclusive. It's kind of her in front of the radar desk from Hoth. Very so that was quite cool. But there was a double reason for that, because Karen's got that costume, and I felt a little bit guilty about the fact that I was trooping and she was just there with the boys and wasn't able to troop. So I told her, quite honestly, I saw this and thought of you, but brought it for me.
That's the best reason ever to buy anything.
I think so. Absolutely. Yeah. How about you? Have you had any new things and stuff and collectibles into the collection this week?
Not a huge amount. I have a copy of Star Wars Ronin, the Visions novel, which I just got started reading. It's out, I think, October 10th or 11th, I think. So we'll be bringing a review to the site about that very soon, hopefully. But other than that, I don't think I've actually had anything in this week, which is like mega rare.
I actually picked up the updated version of Star Wars Year by Year. I mean, that's purely a kind of a vanity, narcissistic reason for actually buying, because I think it's on page 232. There's a photo of me in it. So I wanted to make sure that I was... There you go. But yeah, there's a photo of me, and I think Gary Hale's from the UK Garrison in a Stormtrooper costume. So I can't actually be 100% sure. And also Rebel Legion member Eric. We went down to Leicester Square in April when all you guys were out in, I guess it was Anaheim, I think, for Star Wars Celebration, just before Force Awakens. And we got to see the panel and the trailer at the Leicester Square Odeon. So it was just like a fan photo, for that. So yeah, I just managed to have stayed in at least, I think, two or three. I don't know how many versions I've done, but so far I think I'm in every issue. So it's quite cool. So
I'll go and check on that, because I've got at least two. There's one in a slipcase and there's a loose one. And yeah, I'll check that out. I did not know you were in that. That's very, very cool. We'd better get on with the news, because
we probably should.
Time, and there's loads to talk about. Let's kick off. Let's talk about Hasbro.
Yes.
Hasbro have been really busy this week. They've released a range of droids figures for Black Series and 3¾. There's a new Gaming Greats figure. And good grief, they've done a 6-inch Black Series George Lucas figure. And those things that you've seen, including the Vintage Collection figures for droids as well, of course. What do you make of that lot?
Well, you know me, I was kind of salivating just by the mere thought of actually getting anything droids on some kind of droids card. So very happy to see that they've actually done the Vintage Collection droids figures with the coins as well. That's the cool thing. There's a coin which comes with both R2-D2, C-3PO and Boba Fett. And I think it's quite cool that they've also at the same time released the 6-inch Black Series Boba Fett from droids as well. That's a really cool costume. I've always liked that one. I might have to think about doing a different version of Boba Fett in the near future. But yeah, the George Lucas figure, I think, is just fun, isn't it? They've released him, what, twice before? Once for, is it Celebration 2, I think it was?
Celebration 2, he came out on the old Attack of the Clone style card as, as George Sokol.
That's it, Sokol,
In the 3¾ line. But this is a bumped up version of that, which it does look very cool, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So, and that, in fact, I believe will drop at 6 o'clock tonight. So on Wednesday, 29th September. So, and judging from what I've seen on collector sites, and probably there's going to be a number of vendors who might end up selling out of this one, because this one seems to be pretty damn popular.
The other figure, that was the Black Series Gaming Great 6-inch RC-1138 boss figure. Very nice. Republic Commando, basically, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, it's nice because I've been playing Republic Commando on the PS4 recently, because that's so you can get that to download for like 12 quid from the PlayStation store. I do like the Gaming Greats figures, although I quite preferred them when they were slightly in their own style packaging, because I think this is partly because I don't collect all the Black Series, so I'm sure it makes sense to those who do collect all the Black Series figures that actually this one just kind of fits in with the rest of them. For me, as a, you know, it's just a standalone kind of item almost in its own different line, to have like that kind of packaging, it's a little bit annoying, but nevertheless, I'm sure it will make its way onto my doormat when it gets released in spring of 2022.
Droids, totally agree. Boba Fett 6-inch in that deco and style is amazing. I was predominantly attracted by the vintage figures.
Yeah.
The 3¾. So obviously there's Fett again, R2 and 3PO, which just look fantastic. And yeah, cannot say no.
Hey man, it's me, Kevin Smith, Star Wars fan, Fantatrax fan.
Shooting on Andor sounds like it's finished if you listen to Diego Luna. He seems to be really excited about returning to the character of Cassian Andor, coming back in Andor on Disney Plus next year. And he did talk a little bit about the show and his excitement for it. I'm going to read his quote because I just think this blew me away. In a world where secrets are premium and giving things away, it's a hefty slap on the wrist. This just made me smile. He says, "You'll definitely see familiar faces." Well, that's no surprise because we kind of guessed that we're going to see some Rogue One people who we don't know. "I can tell you about this project like no other because I can't spoil the ending if you've seen Rogue One already. No matter what I say, I can't ruin the ending." I think this is priceless. "To be honest, it's been such a blessing to do this job and do it under these circumstances." He's referring to obviously shooting during COVID. "I had the chance to work with the team that I couldn't be more proud of and admire more. It's a hardcore moment to be out there shooting, and we were really lucky. We're done with the shooting now and getting it ready for audiences to see it. While I can't say much, what I can tell you is that the experience was literally a transformation for me. It's something that I really wanted to do and that I thought I was not going to be able to do. I'm more than happy." So that, to me, sounds like a guy who's pretty damn stoked about the experience he's just had. What do you think?
Yeah, exactly. It sounds like he's had a great time. And bearing in mind, actually, Diego and I think his family had COVID fairly early on and pretty badly as well. Yeah, his son did. I think that's quite a nice point to make. Yeah, as always, isn't it? It's one of those things of like, I like how every single Star Wars actor, even now, still kind of prefaces anything we say with like, "I can't say much, but what I can say is that it's great." I think it would be different, obviously, if he turned around and goes, "That was the hardest, most dreadful thing I've ever worked on in my life," which he would never say. Not now, maybe 5 or 6 years after the fact. You know, the fact is, it sounds like there's no reason to be anything but excited for Andor when it does actually finally get released next year.
It is, yeah, 2022, which will be here before we know it. You just said it, you've had Ewan McGregor getting all excited and really visibly excited about Obi-Wan. Robert Rodriguez, very similar for Book of Boba Fett. And the same with Tamira Morrison. And now you've got Diego Luna hyping up Andor. And of course they're going to hype it up because they want to do more. But, you know, you can kind of tell how stoked they are and how excited they are and proud they are of the product they've done.
I'm Anthony Daniels and you are listening to Fanthatrax. Well done.
The final chapter of Season 2's Mandalorian blew up fandom and the internet with the return of a younger-looking Luke Skywalker. And whilst the focus was on the visuals and how Lucasfilm used a combination of deepfake and de-aging technology to knock 30-odd years off of Mark Hamill, the enhancements that they'd done to his voice seemed to slip under the radar. But to ensure that the voice matched the pictures, Lucasfilm approached a small, fairly new company based in Kiev called Respeecher to try and use their skills in AI audio voice synthesis to not only have Luke Skywalker look younger, but sound younger as well. Earlier last week, I caught up with Alex, who is a founder and CEO of Respeecher, to find out a little bit more about what they did. Can you tell me a bit about Respeecher as a company and also how you kind of got into this kind of field?
Yeah, of course. I mean, we exist as a company for more than 3 years, and we started working on the idea and technology behind that for a few years before that, so maybe early 2017 or something. And we were fascinated with the idea of making one person speaking the voice of another particular person. That would be a voice cloning principle that applies speech-to-speech voice conversion. Because we found out that very popular approach, text-to-speech, does have its holistic limitations. It does sound robotic, and it does not give you control over emotions. And we were playing around with this technology for a while before we got any traction. And first feedback from filmmakers we approached to was that it should sound really good. So it should be on that level of quality where it would go through pickiest sound engineers in Hollywood studios. So since 2018, we've been working on making audio sound good and indistinguishable. And now we are a team of 25 people, most of the team based in Kyiv, Ukraine. We've been doing this voice cloning services for studios that would be film studios, TV studios, animation studios, doing something with video games, starting doing audiobooks and podcasts, as well as we recently got into dubbing and localization field.
When you kind of set up a company, did you see that there was actually a gap in the market for what you're offering now with this kind of voice kind of cloning?
Yeah, I mean, we saw like a very serious limitation. We can call it like one human, one voice, or one human and the voice they have in that particular moment of time. And it cannot be simplified in terms of doing any amount of voiceover you'd need to do, or get back some voice that you couldn't produce anymore as a human because you got older, all that kind of things. And we understood that there's no solution for this limitation, one human, one voice. So that was like initial move to start doing that. And then we were looking for ways and for applications of this particular technology in different spheres. So we started with media production, but I guess as early as next year, we would expand to some additional directions.
Is it a software or is it a service? So is this like software that companies would purchase, or do you just provide everything in-house and therefore they would come to you and you do all of all the algorithms and create the content?
Yeah, most of the work Respeecher has been doing for several years would be a service. So we train our models on our end, we make them sound good, we evaluate them, we improve models for a particular project in order to meet the sound quality, and then we do conversions ourselves. But this year, we actually launched more a self-serve tool, we call it Voice Marketplace, where we try to enable small creators, indie filmmakers, animation makers, and sound professionals to use this tool, just to use their voice to voice over multiple characters from the voice library Respeecher provides.
Respeecher's got voice profiles or talent, as it were. And then obviously, if I was to purchase your service, then I could just go through and just find the voice that would work for, let's say, my podcast or my commercial or something.
Yeah, I mean, in case you are looking for just different voice or just different voices that do not belong to a particular person, you can use our voice marketplace. But if you need a particular voice to be cloned, that would be a one-off project for us, something that we would launch specifically for studio. And one of the reasons we are doing that in manual mode, because we need to be sure that technology is not misused. So we need to be sure that it applied ethically, that there is permission from a target voice, from the voice we clone. It's being done in the right way.
In other words, basically, if I wanted to clone a famous person's voice as a media content producer, I would need to provide you with audio samples. And would I assume that the more samples you're given, the more accurate you can kind of create a voice match. Is that right?
That's correct. I mean, step zero would be, we need to make sure that you have the permission from the voice owner to replicate their voice. And then, yeah, we need samples of this voice in order to train the system to understand this voice. And also we need samples of another voice or the same voice of different age, of the current age, if we do the aging or something like that, in order to show system two voices or more voices, so it would understand difference between different vocal timbres and then is able to convert from a source speaker who would be driving the new voice, the target voice, with a target speaker. And once the system understood this difference, and the process is called training process, deep learning, we can do conversions. So we can take new recordings from source speaker and get them converted into a target voice.
So how many samples would you need in terms of, like, let's say, do you need hours of audio, or do you just need a couple of phrases? How does that affect the outcome?
Yeah, usually we ask clients for around 60 minutes, 1 hour of good, clean speech recordings. But in many cases, we have to work with less data. In case if data is old, we'd need better data from like one source. So it would be like homogeneous data and it would sound similar. And I mean, quality is more important than quantity in our case. So quality is the key. So there should be clean speech recording, no other voices, no background noises, no reverb. In that case, technology would perform best.
From a studio rather than, I guess, a final mixed film or something like that.
Yeah.
So how did you first become on the radar with companies such as Lucasfilm and other film studios? Do you have to go to them or do they come to you?
Yeah, I guess we met a few years ago and there were we're interested in this technology as a cool stuff that can remove some creative borders, as well as their sound team is amazing. They're always looking for new techniques. And since then, we were talking. We were doing some interesting stuff. And finally, they revealed how they used our technology in one of their projects in the Mandalorian. Mm-hmm. We actually waited for this moment for quite a while. It took some time to reveal that. But from another point of view, we are very grateful that it was revealed like 9 months after The Mandalorian was streamed, because no one questioned the voice, because voice sounded so good and so natural.
Yeah, I mean, in fairness, me and Mark, we talked about it and we were trying to figure out if they'd use some kind of voice doubling or voice AI, or if it was just Mark Hamill, because obviously Mark is a brilliant voiceover artist. So we were really curious. So the fact that this came to light ticked a box for us, and you know, we're really interested. What other kind of applications are you, is ReSpeech currently working on? Are you working on other films and other kind of projects beyond film?
Yeah, we do have plenty of projects right now. Right now, we work on several documentaries when we resurrect someone's voice. We do some work in advertisement space when we clone some very high demand voices in order to be able to produce a lot of audio content. We do some work in animation, in video games. This had been like our focus for a few years, when we can scale voices and we can add much more flexibility in the voiceover process. But we really love the cases when there is no other way to get voice but yeah, just using technology like ours, because that's something that brings very meaningful creative potential. So one good example would be a project that we did early this year that was seen, I guess, by 100 millions of people. That would be Super Bowl opening, when we made Vince Lombardi, a famous football coach, say something very meaningful for us at this moment, because he spoke about all the challenges our society goes through, this pandemic, this hard times we'll need to go through. And we did this project together with Digital Domain, who used their technology for holograms, for deepfake stuff. And they also used ReSpeech for making the voice of Vince Lombardi. Another good example when we de-aged someone's voice would be a project we did with Mark Hamill recently, actor who is known for Logan's Run, for the Austin Power movie, and he's now 80 years old. And several decades ago, he was diagnosed with a very severe disease called amyloidosis. And since then, he dedicated a lot of time and efforts and his amazing voice to bring more awareness about the disease, because it's quite rare, but it's very severe. So he wanted more people to know it. He wanted more people to discover it as early as possible. And they made some animation pieces where he voiceovered this like information pieces about the disease. And they found out that actually our knowledge about amyloidosis has changed over the last 15 years. Mm-hmm. And they need to implement some changes there. But he's not available anymore. He's in hospital. His voice has drastically changed. So it doesn't sound like he sounded 15 years ago, but they wanted to keep the voice and they wanted to make it seamless. And we actually did this project pro bono. We brought these new lines in his voice and fixed these animation pieces, so he sounded exactly like he sounded 15 years ago. We also have testimonial from himself. It's a very touching piece, because that's when person who had their voice as some like very important asset, mm-hmm, has no longer access to this asset, so they can sound again. They can make it say something new. That's quite important.
Did you say that was Michael York, the actor?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah,
actually, because it's interesting, because I don't know if you're aware, but earlier this year, a really famous Star Wars voice actor known as Tom Kane, who did the voice on Star Wars Clone Wars, he had a stroke and he's basically lost the ability to speak. So potentially, because obviously there's all this catalogue of him doing voiceovers and voice work, you know, you could potentially give him the ability to speak and to perform again. And so with that in mind, how much kind of creative input would somebody have to be able to kind of, I suppose, help craft the voice cloning? How much kind of flexibility is there in the software?
Yeah, I mean, the flexibility is equal to the flexibility we have as vocal actors, right? So we can drive our voice. We can put all the emotions in our voice we want. And actors can do that better than just average people, because they're specifically trained to do that and they have talent to do that. But what our technology does, it conveys all emotions from a source speaker into a particular target voice. So what it does, it just digitally changes the vocal apparatus to the desired one. So it sounds exactly like a target voice. So in case if someone's voice needs to be replaced, there should be the same person or another person who would be able to perform like this actor, who would be able to put that kind of emotions that are needed from this actor. And our technology would take care of timbre.
So with respect to, let's say if I was a director and you presented me with a voice doubling and I said, oh, actually, can you make it more angry or more sad? Is that a simple thing to do in the algorithms, or is it, and forgive me if I'm oversimplifying, if it's like, I don't know, in like say Photoshop and you could just increase or decrease for the saturation, or, you know, is it that kind of level of input, or is it, you know, proper algorithms and code?
It's basically on humans. So you would get your source actor to studio, say this line in that exact way, and you can record any amount of takes you need. We'll convert these takes, and then you will pick the best converted takes, or you can just do another take with the emotions and inflections you would need to hear in the piece.
I'm Gareth Edwards, and you're listening to FanthaTrax Radio.
Let's come back to the ethical aspect of this. With all this technology and power, there comes a lot of responsibility. What kind of processes or what kind of safeguards do you have in place to make sure that, you know, your service and your software is not being abused?
As I said, when we need to introduce a new voice to the system, we are always in this process. We make sure that there is a permission in place, and we are not taking the projects where permission from voice owner, from their estate, if they're deceased, is not in place. And then basically, if the permission is in place, that means that the person whose voice is being cloned is aware about their voice be cloned for a particular project or particular projects. Make us comfortable in terms of our technology not being misused to clone someone's voice without permission. But I mean, we are good technology, but and maybe one of the best technologies out there. But we should understand that this type of technology would become a commodity within several years, I guess. And this train already started to move, so it's inevitable. And in order to eliminate the risk of such kind of technologies being misused, we do spend a lot of time talking to people, going to conferences to bring awareness about such technology's existence, as well as the bad potential it might have if the technology falls in the wrong hands. Sure. So awareness is a big part of our work. I mean, there is nothing new with the technology. It's like Photoshop. It's like internet back then. It's like printing press. So that's another tool that can be used for good and for bad. Absolutely. And in order to eliminate the risk of the technology being used for bad, we actually need to change our understanding and how we anticipate media in general. I mean, our grandparents used to believe in everything that was typed, right, using printing press. We are not, because we understand that it can be a lie, right? Mm-hmm. That's a similar process. We should adopt it. We should show good cases when the technology used for good creative purposes. We also do work with different organizations that are about bringing awareness, building some right ethical borders around using synthetic media technologies in general. And that's not just synthetic voice, that's also deepfakes, that's also synthetic videos and photos. We do spend a lot of efforts in order to show how the technology could be used for good. Because, I mean, bad news travels so far. Everyone heard about Anthony's Bourdain project, but I guess even less people heard about what's being done with Mark Hamill's voice in Mandalorian. That would be an amazing project, right? So, and another direction that John Favreau actually talked about in this making of is marking content, is making sure that the original content is being marked properly. And there are plenty of technologies that can support this. And then you can tell original content from manipulated content, as well as content that is being produced by Reese Fisher also can be marked using some voice watermarks, audio watermarks. And in that case, we would be able to tell Reese Fisher generated content from any other content. And here comes a necessity of working with gatekeepers and big organizations like Facebook or YouTube in order to being able to provide consumers of the data with a clear understanding if this audio or video, if this piece of content has been manipulated, if it has been marked as original or it has been marked as manipulated, or maybe using deepfake detection algorithm to tell that it's something that was obviously manipulated. There are tons of initiatives around this. I mean, that's quite new technologies, but our society used to adopt new technologies faster and faster. So it's coming soon.
Exactly. As somebody who probably listens to a lot of synthetic voices, are you able to spot fairly easily a bad synthetic voice?
I mean, there are not many good synthetic voices out there. I mean, there are plenty of text-to-speech companies. There are plenty of text-to-speech technologies. They're good. They're flexible. They do sound better and better. But you still hear that they have this robotic sound, that emotions are not exactly there. You can hear some artifacts. And if you listen carefully, you can listen. You can hear all these problems with speech. So in that regard, it's harder to fool our ears comparing to our eyes, because when we see some non-perfect picture, our imagination works for us. So we spot some minor problems. If we see deepfake image or video, we often fall into this uncanny valley. So we feel that something wrong with that, even if it looks amazing. But with audio, it's either black and white. So it either sounds problematic, so something wrong with that, or it's indistinguishable. That's like how our ears were designed, how our understanding of sound was designed, because we used to protect ourselves using hearing when we were back in caves, just to hear the lion is climbing. So there is no spam filters on our ears. And that's why it's more challenging to make good sound that would be indistinguishable from speech.
And in fact, it's one reason why in Star Wars, Obi-Wan Kenobi says, your eyes can deceive you, don't trust them. But he never mentions anything about your ears. Coming back to The Mandalorian, you did your work for Lucasfilm and Jon Favreau, and everybody was really, really happy. And you then just had to wait until the episode came out. Did you even know what episode it was? Like, if it was going to be for the finale, or did you just know that it was going to be in the next season of The Mandalorian? What was it like when you finally saw and heard your voice, you know, your work on the screen?
It's not the first big project when we heard our work on a big screen, but it was obviously exciting, because back then we used the updated technology. It sounded very good. We were even ourselves proud of the sound. And that's not a usual case for a speaker, because we don't like the sound we produce. We always know the bass. We know it could be improved. Yeah. So it was very exciting. But the most exciting part was to see that it was very spot on. That was like the most important scene of the whole season and the most unexpected cameo. Like who expected Luke Skywalker come back and be young? And when I looked at these tweets, when I looked at people's reaction, it was really touching, because as Mark Hamill said, like, I saw a grown man crying.
Is everybody at ReSpeech a Star Wars fan? Are you a Star Wars fan?
I guess so. I couldn't say that everyone is a Star Wars fan, but some of the sound engineers who were working on this project are like real Star Wars fans. So they were extremely excited to work on that.
I bet, yeah. It must have been difficult to kind of keep that as a secret to close friends and families of what you were doing.
Yeah, we used to do that. I mean, that's part of our work. When we work on very high-profile projects, we need to respect the rules, because these rules are designed in order to amuse audience. And that's why a lot of things should be kept in a very close circle to make a great splash.
And hopefully, of course, you know, it will also lead to more additional work with Lucasfilm, which I'm guessing you can't tell me about if you are or not working on anything with Lucasfilm at the moment.
Of course not.
Of course not. Of course not. And why would you? Why would you want to spoil the surprise? How would we go about trying and using your marketplace software? Is it something that's easily available on the internet, or how do we try that?
Yeah, so currently it works in the following way. You go to the voice marketplace tab on our website, and you listen to this bunch of voices we have. I guess we have 27 or 30 voices right now. Wow. And then if you like those voices and you want to sound like one of them, you just fill the contact form and our team would be back to you regarding the onboarding process. And there is an onboarding process. We need to get a sample of your voice in order to add this to our system so it would understand from what voice it would need to convert. And then in a few weeks, you have access to the voice marketplace, and that would be a web tool. You just open it in browser. You can save right there using proper recording conditions, and it would convert your line within a minute or two into any of the voices of your choices. And yeah, you have like a free trial, 3 days, I guess, free trial. But also we are including a lot of updates to the voice marketplace in our next release. And most probably quite soon, in a month or two, you wouldn't need to send us your data. So you would be able to convert from day zero. You just sign up and you can say something new and it would be converted to all the voices we provide via our voice marketplace.
Yeah, so that's fantastic, because I know as when I've worked on documentaries in the past, I've had producers and directors in here, and they've basically had different voiceover artists kind of auditions, and they're like, oh, let's listen to this one and get an idea of what it is actually, you know, you're hearing. So to be able to audition, you know, that quickly and with that kind of live response, that'll be fantastic. That's really exciting.
Yeah, and also check on the voice marketplace part of our website, how Abby Savage, you might recognize her from the Orange is the New Black TV series. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She's an actress, but also she is a sound designer, sound professional. Yeah. And she showcased how she used voice marketplace for adding some lines in the movie that was in post-production she worked on, as well as she showed how she can replace all main characters with her own voice. It's really amazing.
Wow. Well, we'll check it out. Alex, thank you so much.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Mark.
This is Steve Bloom, voice of Zebraelios, and you're listening to Fanthatrax Caravast. May the force be with you.
Regular listeners of Making Tracks will generally know that the episodes come out on a Tuesday and we record it on a Sunday. Today, it's Wednesday, and we're recording it on Wednesday, which means that we've got the chance, and this doesn't happen very often, to talk about something that literally dropped this morning, 8 o'clock on UK's Disney Plus, Galaxy of Sound, 7 episodes, each of which is 7 minutes long. You were at work, Mark, so you can't talk about it, but I can talk a little bit about it. I've seen the first 2 episodes. Bearing in mind, it's Galaxy of Sounds, but it is very much an audio experience. Or so you would think. This has been so cleverly edited. They've really amalgamated what you see on screen in the films that we know so well, but taken out, essentially stripped out that John Williams music, which sounds sacrilegious, but on the contrary, it only makes you realise, one, how brilliant John Williams is and what he adds to a scene, but also how much of the work of Skywalker Sound and before it Sprocket Systems kind of got covered over. So there's 7 episodes. The first episode is Wonder and the second episode is Excitement. So they're the two that I've seen. And then there's Dark Side, Light Side, Beeps, which is about Brian Cameron's favourite subject, droids, Connections, and then Oddities, all the stuff that doesn't fit into any other bracket. I'm going to be chewing through these later on once I've got this episode edited. Ever so good. I'm pretty sure you'll be checking this out, won't you?
Absolutely. So is it? I mean, so I'm just reading the article and it's they run for 7 minutes. So basically what you're saying, it's not like what we thought it could have been actually when we're talking about this off of before we recorded them the other week. So it's not like behind the scenes. It's not like Ben Burtt kind of going, well, this is how I made this, you know, lightsaber sound and what have you. This is basically like an ambient audio experience. So really, I should basically wait until I get home to run this through my surround sound system rather than just watch this on my phone.
Yeah, it's exactly that. And I think when we spoke about it before, because this has been rumoured for a while, the expectation was, oh, this will be David Accord and Ben Burtt and Matt Wood and the rest of the team sort of discussing how they pull the sounds together. And there's Ben, Phil, you know, recording the walrus at the zoo sort of thing for Star Wars and all that. No, it's none of that. It's very much like biomes and vehicle fly-throughs. But what they've done with this one is they've took, in fact, they've not just taken the 9 movies. They've also got scenes from Solo, scenes from Rogue One, and scenes from The Mandalorian. So they've really gone to town because they sit together so nicely and edited all these scenes together. Of course, there's no music leading you in it. It's literally just the sounds, and they're sort of marrying up moments that sort of match each other. And as I say, I've only seen the first two, and I've seen a little bit of Dark Side, but I had to turn it off because Neighbours was on. So, hey-ho. But real world encroachment, it's really, really nice. And part of me thinks, well, Lucasfilm, why didn't you make more of a deal of this and sort of hype it? Because this is fantastic. But then there's another little part of me thinks, actually, just to roll it out like this is kind of kind of
it's
cool.
quite nice.
I mean, you kind of stumble across it.
Exactly. And also sometimes when you know, maybe it's because of what it is, because like how do you hype this? It's a bit like, you know, how do you really hype biomes over fly-throughs? And I think any kind of like press release will probably have a lot of people kind of go, oh, well, actually, that doesn't sound very exciting. Just a drone over Norway or something for half. Yeah. But, you know, with these kind of durations and stuff, these are, you know, kind of like bonus disc-like material.
For everything in one location, daily news, reviews, interviews, podcasts, video and social media feeds, bookmark FanthaTracks.com for Star Wars news 24/7, 365.
A few weeks ago, I was lucky enough to go up to Doncaster for Doncaster Unleashed, and amongst the guests that were there were Guy Henry, which you heard a couple of episodes ago, and Dame Harriet Walter, who played Dr. Colonia in The Force Awakens. It's exclusive to Panther Tracks, Dame Harriet Walter at Doncaster Unleashed.
Hello, and welcome to the first Q&A. I'm very honoured to welcome Dame Harriet Walters. It's just an honour to have you here. A round of applause, please.
Thank you. Thank you for coming in such great numbers.
I started doing my research on you when I knew I was going to interview you, and I thought, right, she's royal shape for your company. She's going to be very serious. I think I had some serious questions. And then I looked into you and found that you're more like myself, you have a really silly sense of humour and everything. I was like, oh my god, she's just like me. And for some reason, I kept thinking, she's like, you know, she's just a normal person.
Yeah, we're all normal, really. We pretend for a living. That's what we do for a living, we pretend. And in real life, we're just like everybody else, really.
You made your Broadway debut in 1983 when the RSC production of All's Well That Ends Well transferred there. What was the transaction like? What was it like from going on to Broadway?
Well, I tell you what, the people in America seem to understand Shakespeare better than the people in England. But it was they take their theatre very seriously in America, and you get treated a bit like royalty over there. You know, you take it with a pinch of salt. Once you've gone, they've forgotten you.
you also played Brutus in an all-female production of Julius Caesar. Now, this really interested me. What was it like playing a typical male role?
Well, it was really interesting, that whole job. I played three major Shakespeare characters, and they were all men. And what you realised was you had a bit of energy, you had to drive the whole show. Normally when you were playing the female roles, you were much more passive. You didn't realise how much energy you needed to play these warriors and kings and leaders. And, you know, I got a bit of taste for power. I thought, oh, I'd like a bit of that.
You played Henry IV as well, didn't you?
Yeah, I played him as a bit of a thug. So instead of being like a royal regal king, I played him a bit more like a kind of criminal warlord.
What's it like making the transaction from stage to screen?
They're completely different. It's like chalk and cheese. And while we've had COVID, there's been very little live theatre, but I've managed to keep going with TV and film. And, you know, here, this is probably my first live appearance for nearly 2 years, so thanks for coming, real people. It's a totally different thing if you imagine you've got a camera watching you close up. You're really only having to speak to the camera, whereas on stage you've got a whole room to fill, you know, so you have to pump up your voice, you have to pump up your gestures, and you have more energy, you know, you drive it right through from A to Z, whereas in films it's little snatches of energy, which is a bit frustrating. But, you know, it's great doing Star Wars, for instance. I was like that all day, just one whole day, me and Chewbacca. Great.
Do you find that TV can be a bit more forgiving than theatre? Because the theatre you've got, it's just one day.
In one way, it is more forgiving, yes, because if you make a mistake, you just do it again. But on the other hand, you know, it's not so forgiving in terms of being really close up. So it picks up every little twitch, you know, and if you're not quite being truthful, the camera can tell where on stage you can kind of disguise it a bit more. So either which way, you've got to be careful.
Pros and cons from both.
Exactly.
Anywhere I was singing TV, it could be so much easier.
I get more nervous on TV than on stage.
Really?
Yeah, because there's people looking right up your nostrils. You can't get away with a thing.
I was going to say, you played Dr. Coronia in Force Awakens. What was it like stepping into this whole world of Star Wars and all this mythology behind it?
It was so surreal, you know, when you're meeting people that, you know, you've watched since you were young, and suddenly you're in the gang. That's extraordinary. I mean, particularly Chewbacca, because he looks the same all the time, you know, so he hasn't aged, you know. So that was extraordinary, and, you know, they accepted me. They were very friendly and accepting as soon as you walked in there. So, but I was a bit intimidated, you know, because everybody, if you walk into the real thing, you go, oh my God. But of course, it doesn't look like it does on the screen. There's a lot of sort of sellotape holding things up, you know, and things, you know, green screen, and, you know, it's not all there all the time. So you kind of have to imagine a lot of what it's going to look like.
Is doing that challenging, acting to like the green screen, I imagine something that's like there that isn't?
Well, I remember Ewan McGregor and Liam Neeson were talking about having to do so much on green screen. And I've had to do some on green screen, but for the most part, I was actually in the room with real Chewbacca, so I was all right. I didn't have to do much green screen stuff. But yeah, it's never the same as having the real person there.
You were here in Killingley, and you played Dasha. I loved Dasha. She was so good. What was it like going from the native British accent to having to learn to speak with a Russian accent?
Well, you know, it came pretty quickly because I'm actually studying Russian.
That is very handy.
And I think what happened, my agent rang me up and said, can you speak Russian? And I said, kind of. And next thing I knew, I was off at Killing Eve. And I did speak with a Russian in the show, but they cut that scene out. And I thought, oh, well, anybody could have done this. But anyway, I'm glad they used me. And it was quite fun because Jodie Comer and I used to mess about in our Russian accents. So by the time you got on screen, it was sort of automatic by then because we've been doing it all day long. The trouble was stopping doing it when I got home. Drove my husband nuts.
Because Dasha in the show, she's so desperate to get back to the motherland, Russia, isn't she? It's her home and she just hates being away from it.
It's so sad. It's a tragic story. And I won't spoil the fun, but we don't think she gets there, do we?
No.
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 Dream on, Dasha.
On stage, on TV, do you have a favourite role? The one that you thought, yes, that's the one I enjoyed the most?
I don't really have a favourite, but I would say Dasha was one of them. Because, first of all, you want to be... Your favourite role is the one you're doing now, so they say. It's no good sort of longing to be what you used to be. But of the recent roles I've played, I think she's the most fun.
Hello, I'm Ahmed Best, and you're listening to FanthaTracks.
As we said before, you're a Dane. What's it like being a Dane?
It's no different from not being a Dane. I mean, nowadays, you know, we're all living in a much more relaxed society than in the past, you know. I think in the past, you'd have been treated differently, but nowadays, you just muck in. But it's nice to have the honour. It's nice to feel, you know, recognised for a lifetime's work. But actually, on an everyday basis, it doesn't make any difference. People are still rude to me in restaurants.
So, when you found out, was it a letter, a phone call?
It was a phone call. You get a letter. Actually, the letter went to my agent. And my agent then called me up and said, you've had this letter saying, would you accept it if it was offered to you? Because I think they like to find out, because if you're going to turn it down, they don't want to publicly reject it. So you get a sort of 24 hours to think about it.
A ticky box?
Yes.
Yeah.
I said, oh, all right, twist my arm.
Let's go on then, why not? So when you get it, do you, does the Queen give it to you?
I actually got mine from Prince Charles.
Right.
Prince Charles had seen quite a lot of my work because he goes to the Royal Shakespeare Company. He's the patron of the Royal Shakespeare Company. So he'd seen me doing quite a lot of work and I had met him before, so that made me a bit more relaxed.
Yeah.
But on the very same day I was given my damehood, my niece gave birth to a little girl. So it was touch and go whether my sister was going to come with me or not, because she was granny.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was going, oh, please have that baby quickly so I can get there. And the baby was born very early in the morning, and I went to the palace at 11:30 or something, so it was great. And they also gave me something to talk to Prince Charles about.
I'm praying for a quick childbirth.
You're doing great.
Yeah. So, are you currently working on at the moment?
What am I currently working on? I'm currently working on a film, but I haven't done a minute of it yet because it's been postponed for 2 weeks. And before that, I was doing a TV show called Succession, which is an American HBO show, which I've done 3 years running. And before that, I was doing a new series called This Is Going to Hurt, which is going on BBC. And Ted Lasso, season 2. Anybody wants to watch Ted Lasso? It's a great show. So I've been busy all year.
So you've done a lot of periods, you've done Sense and Sensibility, you've done Downton Abbey. What's it like when you're doing a period piece, getting into costume and everything, and going back in time? Is it a different like kind of mindset?
It is really. You just, I mean, it usually comes from the script. If the script's good, it will make you say things that give you an idea of what your character's like. So I would say it's no different from playing a character like Dasha. It's like almost putting on a different accent, he's putting on a corset, and, you know, suddenly becoming a different sort of person. But I always try and find the human being underneath, you know, whatever I'm doing. And because that's what I'm interested in, that we're all the same, you know, whether we come from a different period or a different country, we're still human beings, and that's what I'm interested in.
Do you have an ideal role? Do you think to yourself, that is the one I want to play before I end my career, that is the one?
My ideal role hasn't been written yet. I'm still waiting. But it's a bit closer to me because I've played a lot of characters who are a bit mean and nasty, and I don't think I am. And I'd like to play someone who's a bit, you know, a bit more warm and rounded, you know. And also I like making people laugh, so, and I like making them cry. So a comic, tragic, rounded, nice person.
That is one hell of a role. I can't wait to meet the person that writes that. if you hadn't gone into like acting, what would you have gone? Where would you have gone?
Well, that's a very good question. My other major skill is driving, so perhaps I'd have been I wouldn't say Formula One driver, but I'd have been a taxi driver. I'd be very good at that.
I would love to see Formula One driver. I'd be amazing. I would watch that.
University, I did languages, so I, at one point I think my family thought I'd be a translator or something like that, so I probably would have gone into that area of work, but, and I suppose that's a bit like acting, isn't it?
I suppose so, yeah. Well, it's been great.
Thank you.
Before we go, I like to end interviews with a speed round. On the spot questions, what people really want to know, like all these, like, the need to know questions.
Yeah. All right.
Nitty gritty. When I find them.
Not very speedy.
This is the bit that worries me.
Yeah. Not very speedy.
This really shows me up, this bit.
I think it shows me more up when I'm trying to find questions. Dogs.
Dogs.
Ooh, hot or cold?
Hot.
Tea or coffee?
Coffee.
Comedy or drama?
Comedy.
Right, next question. I'm not saying there's a right answer, but there is. Star Wars or Star Trek?
Star Wars.
Wrong answer.
No!
Hello, I'm Warwick Davis, and you're listening to Fanthatrax.
Body Piece. She's done her work on the Obi-Wan Kenobi series for Disney+, but she has, through the post, via director Deba Chow, received some very nice crew swag. And she put it on her Instagram, and basically she has a lovely Obi-Wan Kenobi cap with the twin sons and an Obi-Wan Kenobi crew jacket. There's not an awful lot to say about this other than how cool it must be to receive crew swag through the post from the director. Because we like, you know, we like our swag.
We like a bit of swag, don't we?
Yeah, you know, we like our crew stuff and you see people wearing it here and there. And these do look particularly nice, I think. And it's a good look at the proper official Obi-Wan Kenobi logo.
Well, there you go. Now, that's one thing in that is interesting. So the logo itself, at least on the cap, is basically the Star Wars Obi-Wan Kenobi in that kind of slightly more prequel era kind of typeface and kind of like design with Twin Sons of Tatooine on top of it. But here's a question, and this might be something that I've completely just, you know, we've skipped over or we've just assumed about. We've always referred to it as Kenobi. And so are we to assume that the actual official title for this is now Obi-Wan Kenobi?
Yes. And now I think when this all came about, and I could be wrong, but my understanding is that when it was a film, it was just called Kenobi. But yep. Now it's a series, it's called Obi-Wan Kenobi. That could be supposition on my behalf. The series is definitely called Obi-Wan Kenobi. But my head, and from what I kind of picked up, when it was sort of, I mean, we didn't know an awful lot about it as a movie before it kind of stopped after Solo and became a series. I think it was going to be called Kenobi when it was a film. I'd love somebody to call in and or message in and tell me otherwise, because I'd like to know. I'm curious now I'm saying it, but that's my understanding. But yeah, the show is called Obi-Wan Kenobi. Yeah, when they did that cast reveal on StarWars.com a little while ago, they did refer to it as Obi-Wan Kenobi, and this logo may well have been the logo they used then. It's just to see it formally on crew items really does kind of push it home, doesn't it?
Yeah, and to be fair, Star Wars crew items, since really The Force Awakens, they do knock them out. There's a lot of them floating around, so it's always cool if you can get your hands on it and stuff at some point. I will be keeping an eye out. The jackets always look nice, but I imagine Bonnie's jacket size would probably fit me. I think maybe the whole jacket might fit on one of my arms.
Maybe.
Yeah. But she looks cool. She looks nice and cute. And so you can't wait. Yeah, can't wait to see a bit more of Bonnie and Aunt Beru in action with her, you know, sordid love affair that she's going to have with Kenobi.
Ooh.
That's my speculation.
I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson, and you are following Fanthatrax.
Mark, you've seen a couple of episodes of Star Wars Sounds, which nobody knew was out. The big release recently has been Star Wars Visions. So have you had a chance to see all of those? And, you know, what's your initial thoughts on it as a project?
Yeah, have seen them all. I was really, really impressed with all of them, to be honest. I mean, it was such an interesting concept to do. And I was talking to Becca Benjamin, who's a contributor to Fanthatrax, but obviously better known for Kanata's Castle and Tarkin's Top Shelf and such. And I said to her, I'm kind of surprised, given that George took so many cues from Japanese culture and from Japanese film and all that, and worked it into the original movies and onwards. And it's become a thing that's an inspiration point for Star Wars. That back in the 80s, when anime was just as big as it is now and always has been for many years in Japan, that Lucas never thought to do an anime Star Wars series. It just struck me as something that could have very easily been done, because live-action Star Wars is very difficult. Cost was the thing that stopped George from doing it. You know, CG Star Wars, I was doing some research for an article I was writing earlier, watching Season 1 Clone Wars episodes, thinking, wow, this is like watching Toy Story 1 compared to Toy Story 4.
Yeah.
You know, you forget how far it had come, not to diminish the work that they did at all, but that's just the progress of the technology. But with anime, with Visions, you think this could have happened under George. And there's something refreshingly honest about it, in the sense that, one, it's not tied to canon. So they can just pick and choose and do whatever they want to do, cherry pick the concepts. And the Lucasfilm members of staff and producers, James Waugh and the other producers that worked on it, sort of steered them in a certain direction. If they, oh, that's a little bit like another one we're doing, or that's a little bit like this. Hell of a lot of kyber crystals in this show, you know. So
oh, yeah. You know,
so there's lots of little elements that kind of bleed into different things. But yeah, I loved it. I, to go from something like The Duel, the first episode, which is like, obviously Ronin is the spin-off book from that, just full on, all the way down to The Elder, which is kind of in a similar vein, and then do something like Toby One, or my favourite, Tatooine Rhapsody, which just makes me smile every time I watch it. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. More, please.
To be honest, I'm completely in agreement. You know, I actually watched these over 2 days, so I kind of watched four, and then I watched five the following day. I kind of wanted to give them a bit of a chance to breathe a little bit. And also, I figured that because there's going to be 9 different stories and 9 different styles, and that you're going to be hit over the head with so much kind of different iconography and like visuals, that I thought it'd be a good kind of way to decompress a little bit. And I'm glad I did. Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing that possibly, as a minor kind of criticism, and it is minor across all of them, I think, you know, naturally they've all focused on kind of Jedi or Jedi iconography, which is obviously the closest thing to Japanese in Star Wars. And so I wonder, you know, other than like Tatooine Rhapsody, whether or not, oh, hello, we've just got a breaking news story.
We've just got a breaking news story, sir.
Yeah, absolutely. So this has literally just popped up on my tweet. Okay, so from StarWars.com, his story is only beginning. The Book of Boba Fett and all new original series start streaming December 29th on Disney+. Hashtag The Book of Boba Fett. So there you go. We have a date. We have a release date, and it's the 29th of December.
Now, if that doesn't show you how fast Star Wars moves these days, here we are talking about Star Wars Visions, and they ping out that beautiful piece of artwork as well of Fett on the throne, the date of Book of Boba Fett, and it's at Boba Fett, which is obviously the at handle they're using, hashtag the Book of Boba Fett. Wow, and you can actually follow the Book of Boba Fett now. There's actually an official Twitter handle for it as well.
Yep.
Wow.
I'm doing it
it's
now.
It's all go. But you were saying about Visions. We'll come back to this in a minute. This is exciting news. Literally breaking news. You were saying about Visions, sorry.
I was just saying that I would quite like to have seen slightly more different takes. So I think the reason why Tatooine Rhapsody kind of stands out is because it was so different. There is a Padawan with, you know, a Jedi Padawan in there, but the whole story itself is just like completely, it's so removed from Jedi and that, you know, whereas a lot of them, like you said, kyber crystals, lightsabers, it's a fairly natural thing to tie these two together because of the influence that Japanese like cinema and everything else had on Star Wars. It would have been interesting to see something slightly different. You know, some of these I just watched and I was just like, I want a series of this one. Like the ninth Jedi, that one in particular. And Ronin, I thought it was a reason why they started off with that one. And I think that one in itself was just so unique. I'd like to see, again, more of it, but also expand it a little bit as well. Yeah, you know, we're going to have a nice chance to kind of chew over these in the next, you know, the coming weeks, hopefully. So what do you think? December 29th, we're going to get a single episode, or do you reckon like a feature length episode like we did with The Mandalorian or anything like that?
I think we'll get a single episode because I think with Disney as well, you know, we're just at the tail end of season one of What If, and then move into Hawkeye very soon. And obviously on the cinema, you've still got Eternals and Spider-Man. I think for Star Wars, I think Book of Boba for however many weeks, I think it's 8 weeks. I think it's eight episodes of season one. That'll take us well into February. This is what I say, you know, they can drop great news. They can drop 7 episodes of Star Wars Sound, Galaxy of Sound, onto Disney Plus and not tell anyone. And then later on in the afternoon, put a tweet out, bang, 29th of December's the new date for Christmas.
And I suppose in some respects, this is kind of like, this lifts the curtain a little bit into more your kind of like world, where you could be watching Neighbours or you could be doing the washing up, and then suddenly there's a tweet and a post and, you know, suddenly you've got to get an article on the website. So with that in mind, we'll pick up the Vision discussion next week. And I think we'll do like a more kind of like in-depth review on, let's say, the first 3 episodes. Let's split them that way.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah. For now, that's all we've got time for. So if you want to send us any thoughts or comments, opinions about actually Star Wars Visions, we'll read them out next week, and you know, we can hopefully fold them into a discussion. Mr. Newbold, I'm going to let you go and post up a FanforTracks article. And for everybody else, before I say goodbye, you should probably tell them how they can get in touch.
You nearly forgot, didn't you? Yeah,
I totally did.
I know you did. If you want to be a part of the action and stay updated on all the latest Star Wars news, visit FanthaTracks.com or check out the free FanthaTrax app through the App Store to follow us on your mobile device. You can reach out to us and send in those listeners' questions by emailing radio@fanthatrax.com. I would imagine after today's episode, you'll have plenty of questions. Comment, like, and share on any of our social media feeds at FanthaTrax. Be sure to subscribe, leave a review, preferably a 5-star one, on Amazon Music, Audible, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcatcher or smart speaker of choice. And as always, thanks to James Semple for composing the FanthaTrax intro, Adam O'Brien for our making tracks opening music, and Mark Daniel and Vanessa Marshall for our voiceovers. Remember, this weekend, FanthaTrax returns on Good Morning Tatooine live this Sunday evening, 9 o'clock UK, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, on Facebook and YouTube. We'll be talking all about Book of Boba Fett landing and what we think of Visions and all the other great news that's been happening all in and across the Star Wars galaxy.
Fantastic. So off you go. Go start posting up some stuff. And everybody else, thank you very much for listening. Do appreciate it. So take care, and we will see you, or you can hear us, in fact, at the next episode. But until then, may the Force be with you.
Coming up next on FanthaTrax Radio, it's another episode of Making Tracks.